Chapter 32. Dolly Varden's pretty little head was yet bewildered by various recollections of the party, and her bright eyes were yet dazzled by a crowd of images, dancing before them like motes in the sunbeams, among which the effigy of one partner in particular did especially figure, the same being a young coachmaker, a master in his own right, who had given her to understand, when he handed her into the chair at parting, that it was his fixed resolve to neglect his business from that time, and die slowly for the love of her Dolly's head, and eyes, and thoughts, and seven senses, were all in a state of flutter and confusion for which the party was accountable, although it was now 3 days old, when, as she was sitting listlessly at breakfast, reading all manner of fortunes, that is to say, of varied and flourishing fortunes, in the grounds of her teacup, a step was heard in the workshop, and Mr. Edward Chester was descried through the glass door, standing among the rusty locks and keys, like love among the roses, for which apt comparison the historian may by no means take any credit to himself, the same being the invention, in a sentimental mood, of the chaste and modest Mix, who, beholding him from the doorsteps she was then cleaning, did, in her maiden meditation, give utterance to the simile. The locksmith, who happened at the moment to have his eyes thrown upward, and his head backward, in an intense communing with Toby, did not see his visitor, until Mrs. Varden, more watchful than the rest, had desired Sim Tappertit to open the glass door, and give him admission, from which untoward circumstance the good lady argued, for she could deduce a precious moral from the most trifling event, that to take a draught of small ale in the morning was to observe a pernicious, irreligious, and pagan custom, the relish whereof should be left to swine, and Satan, or at least to popish persons, and should be shunned by the righteous as a work of sin and evil. She would no doubt have pursued her admonition much further, and would have founded on it a long list of precious precepts of inestimable value, but that the young gentleman, standing by in a somewhat uncomfortable and discomfited manner, while she read her spouse this lecture, occasioned her to bring it to a premature conclusion. "I'm sure you'll excuse me, sir," said Mrs. Varden, rising and curtsying. "Varden is so very thoughtless, and needs so much reminding. Sim, bring a chair here." Mr. Tappertit obeyed, with a flourish implying that he did so, under protest. "And you can go, Sim," said the locksmith. Mr. Tappertit obeyed again, still under protest, and betaking himself to the workshop, began seriously to fear that he might find it necessary to poison his master before his time was out. In the meantime, Edward returned suitable replies to Mrs. Varden's courtesies, and that lady brightened up very much, so that when he accepted a dish of tea from the fair hands of Dolly, she was perfectly agreeable. "I am sure, if there's anything we can do, Varden, or I, or Dolly either, to serve you, sir, at any time, you have only to say it, and it shall be done," said Mrs. Five. "I am much obliged to you, I am sure," returned Edward. "You encourage me to say that I have come here now to beg your good offices." Mrs. Varden was delighted beyond measure. "It occurred to me that probably your fair daughter might be going to the Warren, either today or tomorrow," said Edward, glancing at Dolly. "And if so, and you will allow her to take charge of this letter, ma'am, you will oblige me more than I can tell you. The truth is, that while I am very anxious it should reach its destination, I have particular reasons for not trusting it to any other conveyance, so that without your help, I am wholly at a loss." She was not going that way, sir, either today, or tomorrow, nor indeed all next week, the lady graciously rejoined. "But we shall be very glad to put ourselves out of the way on your account, and if you wish it, you may depend upon its going today." "You might suppose," said Mrs. Varden, frowning at her husband, from Varden sitting there so glum and silent, "that he objected to this arrangement. But you must not mind that, sir, if you please. It's his way at home. Out of doors, he can be cheerful and talkative enough. Apostrophe. Now, the fact was that the unfortunate locksmith, blessing his stars to find his helpmate in such good humor, had been sitting with a beaming face, hearing this discourse with a joy past all expression. Wherefore this sudden attack quite took him by surprise. My dear Martha apostrophe, he said. Oh yes, I dare say, apostrophe, interrupted Mrs. Varden, with a smile of mingled scorn and pleasantry. Very dear. We all know that. Apostrophe, no, but my good soul, apostrophe, said Gabriel, you are quite mistaken. You are indeed. I was delighted to find you so kind and ready. I waited, my dear, anxiously, I assure you, to hear what you would say. Apostrophe, you waited anxiously, apostrophe, repeated Mrs. Five. Yes. Thank you, Varden. You waited, as you always do, that I might bear the blame, if any came of it. But I am used to it, apostrophe, said the lady with a kind of solemn titter, and that's my comfort. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I give you my word, Martha apostrophe, said Gabriel. Let me give you my word, my dear, apostrophe, interposed his wife with a Christian smile, that such discussions as these between married people are much better left alone. Therefore, if you please, Varden, we'll drop the subject. I have no wish to pursue it. I could. I might say a great deal. But I would rather not. Pray don't say any more. Apostrophe, I don't want to say any more, apostrophe, rejoined the goaded locksmith. Well then, don't, apostrophe, said Mrs. Varden. Nor did I begin it, Martha, apostrophe, added the locksmith, good-humoredly, I must say that. Apostrophe, you did not begin it, Varden. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed his wife, opening her eyes very wide and looking round upon the company, as though she would say, you hear this man. You did not begin it, Varden. But you shall not say I was out of temper. No, you did not begin it, oh dear no, not you, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, well, apostrophe, said the locksmith. That's settled then. Apostrophe, oh yes, apostrophe, rejoined his wife, quite. If you like to say Dolly began it, my dear, I shall not contradict you. I know my duty. I need know it, I am sure. I am often obliged to bear it in mind, when my inclination perhaps would be for the moment to forget it. Thank you, Varden. Apostrophe, and so, with a mighty show of humility and forgiveness, she folded her hands, and looked round again, with a smile which plainly said, if you desire to see the first and foremost among female martyrs, here she is, on view. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this little incident, illustrative though it was of Mrs. Varden's extraordinary sweetness and amiability, had so strong a tendency to check the conversation, and to disconcert all parties but that excellent lady, that only a few monosyllables were uttered until Edward withdrew, which he presently did, thanking the lady of the house a great many times for her condescension, and whispering in Dolly's ear that he would call on the morrow, in case there should happen to be an answer to the note which, indeed, she knew without his telling, as Barnaby and his friend Grip had dropped in on the previous night, to prepare her for the visit which was then terminating. Gabriel, who had attended Edward to the door, came back with his hands in his pockets, and, after fidgeting about the room in a very uneasy manner, and casting a great many sidelong looks at Mrs. Varden, who with the calmest countenance in the world was 5 fathoms deep in the Protestant manual, inquired of Dolly how she meant to go. Dolly supposed by the stagecoach, and looked at her lady mother, who finding herself silently appealed to, dived down at least another fathom into the manual, and became unconscious of all earthly things. Martha apostrophe said the locksmith. I hear you, Varden, apostrophe said his wife, without rising to the surface. I am sorry, my dear, you have such an objection to the maple and old John, for otherwise as it's a very fine morning, and Saturday's not a busy day with us, we might have all three gone to Chigwell in the chaise, and had quite a happy day of it. Apostrophe, Mrs. Varden immediately closed the manual, and bursting into tears, requested to be led upstairs. What is the matter now, Martha? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the locksmith. To which Martha rejoined, Oh, don't speak to me, apostrophe, and protested in agony that, if anybody had told her so, she wouldn't have believed it. But, Martha, apostrophe, said Gabriel, putting himself in the way as she was moving off with the aid of Dolly's shoulder, wouldn't have believed what? Tell me what's wrong now. Do tell me. Upon my soul, I don't know. Do you know, child? Damn! Apostrophe, cried the locksmith, plucking at his wig in a kind of frenzy. Nobody does know, I verily believe, but Mix. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mix, apostrophe, said Mrs. Varden faintly, and with symptoms of approaching incoherence, is attached to me, and that is sufficient to draw down hatred upon her in this house. She is a comfort to me, whatever she may be to others. Apostrophe, she's no comfort to me, apostrophe, cried Gabriel, made bold by despair. She's the misery of my life. She's all the plagues of Egypt in one. Apostrophe, she's considered so, I have no doubt, apostrophe, said Mrs. Varden. I was prepared for that. It's natural, it's of a piece with the rest. When you taunt me as you do to my face, how can I wonder that you taunt her behind her back? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and here the incoherence coming on very strong, Mrs. Varden wept, and laughed, and sobbed, and shivered, and hiccoughed, and choked, and said she knew it was very foolish, but she couldn't help it, and that when she was dead and gone, perhaps they would be sorry for it, which really under the circumstances, did not appear quite so probable as she seemed to think, with a great deal more to the same effect. In a word, she passed with great decency through all the ceremonies incidental to such occasions, and being supported upstairs, was deposited in a highly spasmodic state on her own bed, where Miss Mix shortly afterwards flung herself upon the body. The philosophy of all this was, that Mrs. Varden wanted to go to Chigwell, that she did not want to make any concession or explanation, that she would only go on being implored and entreated so to do, and that she would accept no other terms. Accordingly, after a vast amount of moaning and crying upstairs, and much stamping of foreheads, and vinegaring of temples, and hartshorning of noses, and so forth, and after most pathetic adjurations from Mix, assisted by warm brandy and water not over weak, and divers other cordials, also of a stimulating quality, administered at first into spoonfuls and afterwards in increasing doses, and of which Miss Mix herself partook as a preventive measure for fainting is infectious. After all these remedies, and many more too numerous to mention, but not to take, had been applied, and many verbal consolations, moral, religious, and miscellaneous, had been superadded thereto, the locksmith humbled himself, and the end was gained. If it's only for the sake of peace and quietness, Father, apostrophe, said Dolly, urging him to go upstairs. Oh, Doll, Doll, apostrophe, said her good-natured father. If you ever have a husband of your own, apostrophe, Dolly glanced at the glass. Apostrophe, well, when you have, apostrophe, said the locksmith, never faint, my darling. More domestic unhappiness has come of easy fainting, Doll, than from all the greater passions put together. Remember that, my dear, if you would be really happy, which you never can be, if your husband isn't. And a word in your ear, my precious. Never have a Mix about you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with this advice he kissed his blooming daughter on the cheek, and slowly repaired to Mrs. Varden's room, where that lady, lying all pale and languid on her couch, was refreshing herself with a sight of her last new bonnet, which Mix, as a means of calming her scattered spirits, displayed to the best advantage at her bedside. Here's Master, Mim, apostrophe, said Mix. Oh, what a happiness it is when man and wife come round again. Oh gracious, to think that him and her should ever have a word together. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in the energy of these sentiments, which were uttered as an apostrophe to the heavens in general. Miss Mix perched the bonnet on the top of her own head, unfolding her hands, turned on her tears. "I can't help it, apostrophe," cried Mix. "I couldn't, if I was to be drowned in them. She has such a forgiving spirit. She'll forget all that has passed, and go along with you, sir. Oh, if it was to the world's end, she'd go along with you." Apostrophe, Mrs. Varden with a faint smile gently reproved her attendant for this enthusiasm, and reminded her at the same time, that she was far too unwell to venture out that day. "Oh no, you're not, Mim, indeed you're not," apostrophe said Mix. "I appeal to Master. Master knows you're not, Mim. The air, and motion of the shay, will do you good, Mim, and you must not give way, you must not rally. She must keep up, mustn't she, sir, for all out sakes? I was a-telling her that, just now. She must remember us, even if she forgets herself. Master will persuade you, Mim, I'm sure. There's Miss Dolly's a-going, you know, and Master, and you, and all so happy and so comfortable. Oh! Apostrophe cried Mix, turning on the tears again. "Previous to quitting the room in great emotion, I never see such a blessed one as she is for the forgiveness of her spirit. I never, never, never did. Not more did Master neither. No, nor no one never." Apostrophe, apostrophe, for 5 minutes or thereabouts, Mrs. Varden remained mildly opposed to all her husband's prayers that she would oblige him by taking a day's pleasure, but relenting at length, she suffered herself to be persuaded, and granting him her free forgiveness, the merit whereof, she meekly said, rested with the manual, and not with her, desired that Mix might come and help her dress. The handmaid attended promptly, and it is but justice to their joint exertions to record that, when the good lady came downstairs in course of time, completely decked out for the journey, she really looked as if nothing had happened, and appeared in the very best health imaginable. As to Dolly, there she was again, the very pink and pattern of good looks, in a smart little cherry-colored mantle, with a hood of the same drawn over her head, and upon the top of that hood, a little straw hat trimmed with cherry-colored ribbons, and worn the merest trifle on one side just enough in short to make it the wickedest and most provoking headdress that ever malicious milliner devised. And not to speak of the manner in which these cherry-colored decorations brightened her eyes, or vied with her lips, or shed a new bloom on her face, she wore such a cruel little muff, and such a heart-rending pair of shoes, and was so... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.